you have to connect with each individual hitter. You can have a theory or thoughts on hitting, but essentially you're coaching 16 individuals. Getting the most out of them one at a time is really more important than your overall big picture thoughts on hitting. Because essentially those guys want to succeed and your team needs to win.
Going back and forth for years on taking pitches, driving pitch count, and then when you were seeing those dudes who were 92, 94, and then there was a guy in the bullpen who was 96 with a slider, I said, screw that. I have no interest in the bullpen. Let's see the starter for the fifth time, so let's not worry about pitch count.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we have answered your call. You are dialed back into Calls from the Clubhouse, and we have a dynamic episode on deck for you today. Just wait, coaches. But this podcast platform is about serving our coaches around the world, especially those that are seeking to develop themselves, those who are wanting to digest different thoughts and opinions on this game and challenge how they're teaching its fundamentals, helping the players inside their program. Simply put, this is about personal growth. And if you're into that, this is exactly where you want to be. And welcome to the show. Now, please do me a favor. Stay tuned to the very end. We have a call for action in the outro for all of you listening in right now. And I can't wait to watch you work on this. Now, supporting this podcast are our proud partners and great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. And these guys have been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. They've transformed over 200 facilities around the country, and they want to work with you. So go to their website, astroturf.com. Check out more information about what they're doing for all these great facilities around the country. Find out how AstroTurf can help take your facility to brand new levels. Now, scoring runs is at the top of the to-do list for every single offensive coach in our game, but the devil is in the details on how we actually go about hanging up crooked numbers on the scoreboard. Success leaves clues, and we nailed down two elite offensive minds in New Mexico State head coach Brian Green and UNC Greensboro head coach Link Jarrett to discuss their approach to building offensive juggernauts and causing fits for opposing pitching coaches. Now, this interview is jam-packed with outstanding insight and details as to how both Greeny and Link go about teaching and coaching their guys on the offensive side of the ball. We open up their specific practice plans. They take us on a stroll inside their cages and even into the classroom as to how both men cover all facets of constructing the Aggie and the Spartan offenses, which have both ranked near the top of the NCAA Division I statistical leaderboard for multiple years running now. It's powerful to hear Link and BG truly discuss offense, period, but listen for each one of them digesting the other's information, and they immediately start challenging where they're at and how they can even get better. You're just all witness to the birth of a new friendship and a network being formed between these two great offensive minds, which is exactly what the ABCA is all about. It's just awesome stuff for you today, guys. Now, just a tip from your Uncle Sheets here. Do not start this interview without pen and paper close by. I promise you, you'll want to write this stuff down. That is certified audio gold heavy throughout this entire show as we talk with two of the very best offensive coaches in college baseball, the head coach of New Mexico State, Brian Green, and UNC Greensboro skipper Link Jarrett. They both join today's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And hang on, coaches, this great interview is coming at you right now. Okay, coaches, if you were looking for a podcast where you could listen to two of the very best offensive guys in the country, you have clicked into the exact podcast you were looking for. We're talking with two guys that have done a great job in every stop they've made offensively, and especially where they sit right now. What they've done has been nothing short of exceptional, and we're going to get their information out on the show. We'd love to welcome in the head coach of New Mexico State, Brian Green. BG, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Chief, honored to be here, and thanks so much for the opportunity.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for being on with us. We're also joined by Link Jarrett, head coach at UNC Greensboro. Link, thanks for being on the show with us today.
Sheets, thanks for having me. I appreciate all the ABCA has done through my career. I'm happy we could have this talk.
Well, and we're going to dive right into that. You walked right into my spider web, and I'm going to let you kick that off, Link, because I love getting guys like you all on the show that are loyal and proud ABCA members and give you the platform to speak about what ABCA has meant to you over the years. Link, hit that off for us.
My first convention was in 2000, I believe it was in Nashville, Dave Barnett hired me at Flagler College, and Dave taking me to Nashville was probably the most important step in learning all of the facets of what coaching was really about. And
sure,
I'm so appreciative of what Coach Barnett did for me, and that dragging me up to Nashville with my wife. I had no idea what a convention was like. The vendors, the instruction, meeting people in areas that I needed to learn how to take care of a field and work on the cages and buy the right conditioner, that stuff was invaluable to me starting out. And Skip Bertman was one of the speakers, and him talking about when he got to LSU, his list of tasks to get that facility to a championship level, painting the bathrooms, the foul pole, redoing the dugout benches,
right,
things that as a player never crossed my mind. That convention and getting the opportunity with Dave starting out means the world to me. And then every year following along at the convention and meeting new people, I look forward to it every year, and it's been the ABCA and everything that surrounds it has been a tremendous influence on my career in baseball.
That's outstanding. Thank you for sharing that. And BG, same question. Again, when you think about ABCA, and you were even up on the main stage a couple years ago, but what's that convention? What's the membership? What's being part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity meant to you, Brian?
Well, Sheath, I remember, similar to Link, I mean, my first convention back in 2000, it was a huge impact for me, and I had never seen anything like that. I was working at the time at the University of San Diego. Rich Hill was actually a speaker, and he went up on stage and thanked all of his coaches that had worked for him, and I was one of them. I had never forgotten how that made me feel, and that impacted me individually in terms of recognition for assistant coaches and players. But I remember him. That was a big impact for me. And I remember my first time seeing Gary Ward and watching him speak on hitting and teaching me. It was the first time I had ever seen someone with a legitimate true system and demonstrating it on stage. And that blew me away. And I thought, boy, do I have light years to go in terms of teaching.
Right.
And it really opened up my eyes in terms of doing that. And then obviously the networking component of it. I have met so many coaches there that when you leave there, there's a relationship where there becomes an email or a phone call. I think 2000 is really when my career as a teacher and instructor took off because of the resources that the ABCA has enabled me to have. And being twice a speaker up there, the first time I couldn't breathe, I probably lost 10 pounds in a 40-minute session. And then speaking to Orlando, just unbelievable experience. And it is the highlight of the year, to be quite honest, for a coach. And for me, being a head coach, our staffs have to go. It's a requirement, and it's the highlight of the year going to that thing.
That's awesome. You know, and it's an interesting dynamic, at least for me personally, knowing both you two. Link, moving here a couple years ago to Greensboro, getting a chance to meet you face-to-face and watching what you've done at UNCG. Greeny, spending time with you at UK, and just the influence that both you guys have had, even from a distance but also up close and personal, on changing the viewpoint of the way that I see the game, and more importantly, offensively. And I've referenced a lot of those moments, especially Greeny, the stuff that we went through at Kentucky. But what I want you guys to do, and BG, I want you to kick this one off, walk us through your career path and just bring us up to speed that gives us the platform to jump on this offensive talk.
Sure. Now, do we have 3 hours?
Yeah, exactly.
No,
a lot of stops.
I think all of us, you're always going to target, you know, a coach or a mentor or somebody who really impacted you. And a lot of times when you look back, or when I look back, I just realized how fortunate that I have been at an early age playing at New Mexico State for Elliott Avent, now at NC State. And my career path kicked off with when my season was over as a senior. Elliott gave me the opportunity to be a student assistant at New Mexico State, was there for a year. And then the next thing you know, I'm back at my alma mater in Southern California for Dennis Rogers at Riverside Community College. Mm-hmm. 2 years at Cal Poly Pomona, 2 years at Chapman University with Rex Peters and Fred Hoover. And then at 30 years old, at 30 years of age, I get the break, and I really do. I get a call from Pat Casey and Gary Henderson to go be the volunteer assistant at Oregon State. And that's when it really started to take off for me. Oregon State for a year, Rich Hill, University of San Diego for a year, Mike Trapasso at the University of Hawaii for two, and then a chance to go to my dream school growing up in Southern California from Temecula when Coach Savage calls and offers me an opportunity to go there for 4 years. And I was his hitting coach. I ran the offense there, and And then Gary Henderson calls at Kentucky, and I've got a chance to go to the SEC and be the offensive coordinator there. Mm-hmm. Those experiences all have put me in the position to be the head coach in New Mexico State. But that San Diego, Hawaii, UCLA, Kentucky experience was when offense really took off for me. Rich Hill really opened my eyes in terms of a different brand, a legitimate West Coast offense. It was the first time I'd been exposed to it. And then, to be honest, the conventions and sharing information and growth and finding ways to get better, and then having really good players at UCLA have prepared me for Kentucky. So mm-hmm. I've been investing in it, and I've been a hitting coach in charge of hitting since 2000, and that's a great experience in knowing if you don't hit, you got a chance to lose your job, so you better figure it out and find answers quickly.
That's it. Couldn't spell it out any better than that. And Link, yeah. same question, man. Walk us through, get us caught up to speed to what led you there to take the big chair at UNCG.
Well, I played for Mike Martin, one of, if not the greatest, most consistent coach in college history.
Absolutely.
Learned a lot about how to find ways to win games, use the short game very well. We weren't the most gifted offensive team when I was playing. I thought our pitching was really extraordinary, but we used our short game. We had versatility in the lineup, and I was taking note of that even while I was playing. Five seasons with the Rockies, I was around Clint Hurdle, who was our roving hitting instructor. I think of Greg Gross, who was a hitting instructor for us. Got to play alongside Todd Helton, and I watched Todd in the way he competed every day, and I kind of put that in my archive of notes of his pitch-by-pitch approach and competitiveness, knowing that one day I was probably going to end up coaching, maybe not a career as a major league player, but I always had a fondness and a desire to coach. Then got my start with Dave Barnett at Flagler College. And you know, I told you, learned how to do a lot of things to make the program function, taking care of the field, lining up people to take tickets, run the scoreboard. I thought all of that gave me a very good foundation for learning some of the things that you don't notice as much as a player. And I was very fortunate that Dave gave me that chance. Back to FSU, I was there as a volunteer coach in 2003. Craig Gibson hired me at Mercer 4-5. East Carolina 2006 through 2009, and I felt like those years were pivotal for me to really fine-tune and develop my approach and thoughts on what college hitters needed to be able to do to help you win and build a championship offense.
Right.
From East Carolina, went to Auburn, had some really special offensive teams at Auburn. 2010 will probably go down in history as one of the finest offensive groups in college baseball ever. That team had tremendous firepower, and we were able to do a lot of neat things and won the championship SEC West that year. Very fun. John Pawlowski hired me at Auburn, gave me a lot of flexibility to run the offense and put in some things that I believed in. And then from there, got the head job at UNCG, and I continued really to do the same things I did at East Carolina and Auburn as the head coach. Joey Holcomb has been tremendous the last few years, helping us continue to fine-tune our offense and throwing batting practice every day and really helping create a high-level offensive mindset in the program, really day in and day out.
It's awesome. Thank you guys for diving in. And I think that gives us, again, the platform to build upon to really start talking into this offensive approach. And Link, I want you to start this question off as we go into more detail. I think as much detail as we can offer inside these shows always really hits home with our coaches. But talk through, I'm more interested specifically into the change in perspective of how you viewed offense and the details inside that. So from where you started coming out of professional baseball into coaching to where you sit now, how much has your perspective changed? And if you could, give us some of the meat inside that answer.
Two things jump into my mind.
Okay.
I think we all as coaches start out with a technical belief on how the swing and how physically hitters should go about it.
Right.
I guess as I got deeper into it, I realized you have to connect with each individual hitter. You can have a theory or thoughts on hitting, but essentially you're coaching 16 individuals, all with different physical capabilities, different roles on the team, and getting the most out of them one at a time is really more important than your overall big picture thoughts on hitting. Because right. essentially those guys want to succeed and your team needs to win. How you get that, I noticed that my individual attention got me further than trying to constantly explain how the back knee works to initiate the swing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That would be one. Two is you look at the game last night, the Major League All-Star game, you look at great, great hitters. Rarely do their stance, load, stride, entrance, rarely are they identical.
Mm-hmm.
What I found is the approach pitch by pitch mentally with what guys are thinking and what their plan of attack is every pitch is probably a more important indication of their success than trying to get them to hit like the next guy in your lineup.
Right.
I think it's the individual approach and then getting them to understand a pitch by pitch mental approach to competitive success is the ticket for me.
That's awesome. As you're saying that, I keep thinking of a great quote of when you really dive into what elite hitters do, elite hitters make adjustments pitch to pitch. Great hitters make adjustments at bat to a bat. You know, that's what separates the best from the very best. Greeny, what would you add to that in terms of your perspective changing over the course of your career? Where did it come from to where is it right now?
Well, I don't know if Link and I came from the exact same school, but, you know, in preparing for this thing, Link, that was awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to say a lot of the same things you just said. Sheath, I think this would be a really interesting topic if you had a hitting guy that was 40 years old and then a hitting guy who was 25, and Link touched on that.
Right.
I think it's very true. I think being in Kentucky was when it really opened up. And, in fact, Link, 2010, we both had a couple of offenses that could do some things. That was pretty scary. I think you guys came to Cliff Hagin. But, you know, in terms of the perspective change, the swing being the primary focus, the swing is important, but the swing is secondary. I think as time passes on, all of us can point to hitters who mechanically are flawed or mechanically might be different than what is what you're supposed to do per an expert analysis or even per our four absolutes mechanically of the swing, but people find barrel and find rhythm. My perspective has changed, Sheath, on a couple of things. One, you know, our job as offensive coaches at the end of the day is to score runs and to score a lot of runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that moves into a couple of things that are really important. The 80% rule, I've really changed on that, you know, spending a lot of time on the short game or on a false break offensively or on a hit and run. You know, those things are important and are part of the routine package. However, we spend a lot of time on offensive approach, individualized rhythm, and my job as a hitting guy is to understand each player's rhythm, try to get into their body and their brain with them, and see if we can find something that allows them to be the most comfortable. But the two areas where my perspective has really changed, aside from offensive approach being number one, is how much more time we spend on the mental game with routines, one pitch at a time, being able to really truly get into the box with a clear head. And then simplifying. Sheath, I stand, and you may remember this, going into those summers at UK, you know, if we had five bullet points of offensive approach after a summer, could I get it to four? Could
right.
I get it to three and simplify it for the kids so we could really master those skills and not scramble their brains? So I think the technical side has decreased for me, my perspective, and I think the perspective change has become more offensive approach and certainly more mental game.
Okay, so I want to outline this for our listeners because, again, we're talking about offense, and again, we could dive into all the numbers. I just thought a few jumped off the page that really help just paint the picture for where this is going. And we're looking at 2017. New Mexico State lands at number 4 in team batting average, UNCG number 6, where last year UNCG led all of Division I in team batting average. This year, UNCG lands at 13th in hits, New Mexico State 18th. New Mexico State landed at 12th in on-base percentage, UNCG 31st. New Mexico State lands at 7th in slugging percentage, UNCG at 24th. So we're talking with guys that probably across every single front are really getting the offensive machine going inside their program. And Brian, I want you to start this one off, if you could, for our listeners, outline your program's approach on offense. Give us the Cliff Notes version, but also give us the absolutes or the pillars or the, like you said, the simplified version of what you're talking about with the hitters at New Mexico State.
And this really started at Kentucky, you know, and it was after 10. You know, this is cool to have Link on here as well, because Auburn's offense was real. And I remember, and these are things that I'm really blessed and fortunate at UCLA and then into Kentucky. And, you know, you look at other hitting coaches and you're looking at their offense, and we're all picking each other apart, but we're more importantly trying to learn from each other.
Sure.
You know, these guys are rhythm based. These guys are very lift separate based. These guys are, you know, foot down early, bust rhythm, hit it on the ground, run based, or whatever it is. But at Kentucky, I really felt like we were able to establish, or I was able to establish for me, the absolutes of offensive approach that were truly important. And what we did was, I'm a numbers guy. I'm a trust guy. Those are my personality traits. And I took the numbers and the things that were most important to me, fly balls, line drives, ground balls, spray charts, where we were hitting and pull middle and off. Mm-hmm. And it converted that into an offensive approach to where we could statistically defend our offensive approach. And I'll go over that with you. I love talking about this.
Sure.
There's four keys. There's four absolutes. And prior to stepping into the box, but it's got to be about the brain. And this is the umbrella that the offensive approach falls under. But one pitch at a time rhythm, paying attention to the kids' rhythms, paying attention to their routines. Where are they on deck? Are they getting in tune with the pitcher? I love those Twitter feeds when you see hitting coaches blasting out the on-deck hitter is taking pitches or even swinging at the baseball on deck, trying to get in the zone and grab a couple free pitches. But I think it's critical that you understand what your hitter's rhythm is and you understand what his routine is. So as an offensive coach or your coach who's running the offense, if they're on the same page, you can slow somebody up or speed them up or get them the right thoughts. But when you get into the box sheets, we've got three keys for offensive approach. These are our pillars. This started at Kentucky in the SEC. I was going back and forth for years on taking pitches, driving pitch count. And then when you were seeing those dudes who were 92, 94, and then there was a guy in the bullpen who was 96 with a slider, I said, screw that. I have no interest in the bullpen. Let's see the starter for the fifth time, so let's not worry about pitch count. The first pillar being be aggressive. We actually monitor this. We have a thing called GMOBs and fastballs, but we have a number of 18, and those are early strike fastballs and get me over breaking balls. We'd like to send the word out that we're going to swing. I think everybody knows that we're aggressive, and it forces you into a couple of things. You have to be able to dominate a second pitch on the mound, which is tough to do at times. But we want to send it out that we're swinging, and we want our kids to be aggressive and to get that mindset. And I think that is how you drive pitch count, because I think that it makes the pitcher, potentially forces him to really have to command a third and potentially nibble and get your hitter into a 1-0 count. So pillar number one is to be aggressive. And then pillar number two is, this is very individual for our program, but is to understand neutral count hitting. In the past, I've called it look away, react in, but that wasn't necessarily the concept. But neutral count hitting and an understanding of the pitching coach that you're dealing with, is he a power guy? Is he a fastball guy? Is he a mixed guy? And then the guy on the mound, is he a velocity guy? Is he a specialist or is he a mixer? And you've got to teach your hitters to understand that concept and then understand where they sit in the batter's box, if they're leading off, down, or in the middle. But neutral count hitting is pillar number two. And to pay attention to that pitching coach and what he does. And then the velocity. If a guy doesn't have velocity, the odds of you getting a neutral count breaking ball are going to be pretty high. And he's got a chance to be a double up guy. And if he's a velocity guy, the chances of you getting a fastball out or half are probably pretty good. And so that's a lot of scouting report too, but it's an understanding of be aggressive early in the count, understand what you're looking at, the middle count, neutral count hitting. And then the third thing is you've got to have a two-strike approach. I think that's another area that truly can drive pitch count.
Sure.
Get up onto the plate, choke up, all those things. That, you know, mechanically, there are a couple of adjustments that we all make. Most of us are going to be pretty standard on that, but take away the outer half, maybe come up on the bat, look away, react in, fight. But the biggest thing is just the mentality of wanting to put the ball in play and spit on breaking balls down in the dirt. I'll never forget Chris Bassone in 2010. A kid hit 380 with two strikes. He would widen up to no stride, slap the ball to the left side and run, and he was competitive as anybody I've ever coached. And that, for me, drives me that we can do it. You can hit 350-plus with two strikes. It's not easy to do, and obviously you and I both remember BC was special.
Sure.
But it can be done. So be aggressive, the neutral count hitting and the look away, react in understanding, and then a two-strike approach all under the umbrella of one pitch at a time and rhythm and routines.
Awesome. And Link, same question. Good stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Now dive into yours. Talk about what you do with the Spartans. What are the absolutes or the pillars that are inside your offensive approach there at UNCG?
Well, big picture stuff. For me, on-base percentage of 400. That's our goal, on-base percentage of 400. And there's a lot of ways on-base, you know, hit by pitch, walk, base hit, obviously. I would like one-third of our hits to be extra base hits, one-third.
Okay.
And 2016, I think we led the country in average, which obviously helps your on-base percentage. Mm-hmm. I think we led in on-base percentage average and slugging. That was the perfect storm of the ability to drive balls by telling them a third of your base hits should be extra base hits. Those guys are going to stretch that thing every possible chance they get to try to stretch a single to a double. I love that. Hmm. We led the country in triples this year. The constant pressure on the bases to extend. Love it. I don't think we quite got to a third of our hit extra base hits this year, but still very productive. A little bit of a different team.
Mm-hmm.
A pitch-by-pitch approach, a plan. Every pitch. Do not go up there for one pitch without a plan. And it could be very simple, but see ball, hit ball is not really a plan. I mean, we've got approaches. We'll get into that maybe a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But a defining difference. Count for me is either less than two strikes or two strikes. And I want them to feel very different as they hit out of a less than two strike or a two strike count. Less than two strikes, one third of the hits, extra base hits. Like, we're trying to get pitches to drive. That's where I hope that the walks and the deeper counts develop, just out of being greedy.
Sure.
And when you get two strikes, man, now we got to find ways to put that ball in play. Cover away, cover fastball and adjust in. Cover fastball away and adjust off speed and be an absolute tough, tough two-strike out. Because at the end of the day, if you can spoil some tough pitches or, you know, sometimes that soft little soft serve line drive that finds its way through the middle, that one at-bat might be the difference in the game. And I take to heart watching those guys battle and fight off tough pitches. That means as much to me as a home run. And we try to keep it simple. And in a nutshell, those are the big picture things that we talk about in our program.
Greeny says you guys went to the same school. You could be brothers from another mothers, because this is awesome.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing how similar this is, and we haven't really ever coached together, worked yet. It's
That's
funny.
Right.
It's good.
That's pretty awesome.
It is awesome, and it's I can hear Link, and I think he said simplifies,
yep.
You know, a lot, and that for me is just, the more I get into this, when I look back at in working with, whether it was hitters or infielders, you know, I realize and I know, which is why I've adjusted, too much information, you know, and you're getting on your kids, and, you know, we can't focus on anything less than, you know, three keys or less, and that's proven. And I just look at when I used to break the swing down or break the approach down, too much. And then the next thing you know, you're losing what you really want. So I think each and every year, if you can simplify. Link, I was writing your stuff down. I think it's great. Just the team goal aspect of it, because that there is no question, if you're putting a double on the line statistically as a measure, your kids are going to stretch. And if kids are chasing their goals and they get thrown out, we're still clapping our hands as coaches.
Link, I want you to start this one off, and I want to take our listeners inside your practice plan. And, you know, knowing how the schedule works, I think it's maybe best. Let's talk about how you would approach the fall, especially with your offense and your hitters. And you said those 16 guys, you're trying to acclimate them to what the Spartans do offensively. Then take us into spring practice and pregame BPs and the evolution of a season. If you could, open that up for us, what goes on at UNCG through the practice plan.
Okay. In the fall, we try to limit skill work in the fall on the very front end to 2 weeks or less. And I like to jump right into team practice.
I like it.
I want to get everybody's feet on the ground initially. I want to talk about our verbiage, our language. We talk about pitch selection and approach from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do any swing mechanic adjusting early on in the fall. I don't.
Yeah.
And then right into team practice where we video. We have a nice little QAB chart, very simple, but we keep it. We video, we archive. I don't say a word other than pitch selection and approach until I've seen 20 live game at-bats. If we're just strictly talking hitting right now, I want to archive that because I've learned when you dig into that video, sometimes you see stuff slow down that you don't see watching that freshman from the side in a scrimmage. It takes a little studying, and I think that's important. And we get to recruit these guys, and I think it's important that they feel like they're in here to do what you recruited them to do before
right.
you start adjusting.
That's right.
So we get into it. They probably have 35, 40 at-bats maybe in the fall. We take a break. Everybody goes through a very simple, like, from the ground up, feet, stride, knees, shoulder. I really break it down about halfway through. They see at-bats on the video. So when they come in there, we've already got some of the at-bats and swings pulled up. Each guy is in there about 20 minutes. And then the back end of fall is skill work, you know, defensively, of course, as well. But in this case, offensively, based on the things that that guy needs to work on for a 4 or 5 week skill work period from mid-October through early November. And I think the trust that's developed by letting them play a little bit and settle in, I think the logic behind that is sometimes guys that may look unorthodox to you, if they really are having success and you see that video, it may not be as unorthodox in that launch position as it looks in that stance.
Sure.
You need to be smart about making adjustments. And that's how we lay out our entire fall. And I haven't changed that in the last, 12, 15 years.
There you go.
In the preseason, we continue. It's like we pick up with skill work like we left off on the back end of the fall. And the skill work, 100% of each guy's skill work is individualized. So your big right-handed cleanup hitter, he may not spend a lot of time on short game. He may spend a lot of time on sitting on that right-handed breaking ball. Mm-hmm. Where your leadoff guy, there may be some reps on his field skill work that's strictly devoted to bunting. And each guy's so individualized. But I think on the back end of the fall and the front end of preseason practice, the individual attention is really, really important. Batting practice, man, we on field is between 23 and 27 swings a day. I say pitches probably is the right word, pitches. You know, some of it's bunting.
Sure.
Some of it's situational hitting. But that's kind of our normal BP, and we change it daily. Our cage work, we have a really nice setup with an ATEC machine that's elevated on a 15-inch platform. So that thing is fed. It's the same trajectory and path that they'll get on the field in a game. You know, we throw good BP. I feel good about what we do on the field. The cage work is very productive and intense. And so we rotate from cage, field to bases. And then after the base running's tough. You know, after they've run the bases, sometimes the guys will do some fungos. Sometimes those four guys will strictly go out and help shag a little bit and move on to their next spot. So that's how we structure it.
Outstanding. BG, same question. When you're looking at the Aggies' offensive plan throughout the year, open up that practice plan for us and show us what we're doing at New Mexico State.
Yeah, Lake, great stuff. Sheets with us, we actually just, the fall is flipped, and it's primarily and completely based around weather. You know, we can go into November in Las Cruces wearing shorts. So we won't start team practice until the 1st of October. So we've got, we've got 6 weeks of individual skill work instruction. But just in terms of what we do, a lot of similarities again, and this is trial and error learning. But, you know, this whole thing, particularly when it comes to hitting, if that hitter doesn't trust you, the hitting coach, you're not going to make an impact with him, whether it be mechanically or offensive approach or really buying into, hey, man, I really think you need to be sitting soft here. You're going to get it. If you don't have that trust and there's anything that's not rock solid, you're going to have an issue. So I believe in the same thing, and I know that, and I took that from professional baseball, but it's a four-week or a month period where we don't talk mechanics. It's hard to do as a coach. I think the more confidence you have in yourself, the easier it is to sit back and watch. But we'll communicate that with the kids. We're not going to make any adjustments with you. We recruited you. We don't want you to come in here, flip you around. We start our fall inter squads. You fail, and we're the problem, and we're the cause of it. So We want to make sure that they own their careers, and we give them a lot of flexibility, build up the trust for a month. But the individual skill instruction part, we get right into mechanics just from an understanding standpoint. I do a lot of talking early in the fall, PowerPoints, meetings, pictures, just for the basic understanding that when we start to pull out the video, they know what we're looking for, or at least have taught them mechanics. So when they're looking at their own swings, they can have an idea. But it's drills for 4 to 5 weeks. Those drills are all the same. You know, we do a leg lift drill, we do a rhythm drill, a hop drill, we're throwing med balls. It's half of it's training based, and half of it is just seeing if guys can do these drills. The clutch rhythm drill, we move the plates up and back. And then Link hit one that's very important to me, and that's plate discipline. We start that from day one, using the colored plates, even in our front toss. We chart that. We want to know our kids. We'll make them take pitches, make them take specific areas. And we want them to understand, or for us, a better understanding if they truly know what the plate is, so we can help them in that regard. When we get to team practice, team guy, we're a big routine program. You remember Big O?
Sure.
We're still doing that.
Love it.
Our offenses are of 9 stations, and it's all offensive skill work. We work from live. Link said this, we're about the same, 23 to 27, maybe 30 swings, no more than that. We'll have an execution round to start, and then we'll have a middle op start round. We'll have a 2-strike round, and then we'll hit. All of them are based around goals, but run the bases. We hit a right-handed breaking ball, a left-handed breaking ball. We have live 2-strike mix. We have short game, and then we have individual drill portions every day. And Link said that. We do a similar thing within our Big O. We'll have 3 stations. We have an AstroTurf infield, so we'll have stations set up behind the cage. The infielders will bring their gloves out, and they'll work on short hops as part of their progression, along with a short game or a hit and run slash. And if we've got a group of power guys, they'll be hitting a med ball, or they'll be doing front toss, and they won't be doing short game. They may be guys that don't bud. So, but again, we won't determine that for about 6 weeks until we determine in terms of, okay, this is probably going to be your role. Let's start to shape it for you.
That's so good. I want to open this up to either one of you guys, because I think the more that you've spent time around really great offensive guys, you hear them talk about classroom sessions and chalk talk and coming off the field into more of a maybe quote-unquote teaching environment where it's blackboard, it's chalkboard, it's PowerPoint, like Greeny referenced. How much do either one of you dive into the chalk talk or the teaching segment sessions with your club?
Well, I'll start that. You know, we have our mechanics when we get into that, but we have chalk talks, you know, every 3 weeks to a month, and it's entirely on the offensive approach component of it. You know, it takes time, and I think both Link and I would probably agree that, you know, your hitters are going to improve. You see the A.J. Reeds of the world or the Luke Maleys of the world who are punching out a ton, not walking much, and the next thing you know, that junior year with strength and maturity and approach, those ratios are 1-to-1, and you're driving the ball out of the park. But for us, the curve that we're trying to speed up is an offensive approach and a true understanding. And I really think that you can categorize and simplify, you know, pitchers and pitching coaches into a couple of categories. You know, are they front end guys? Are they backwards guys? Are they mixed guys? Are they same side guys? And we spend a lot of time talking about that to get guys more in tune with understanding. So, you know, by the middle of the year, and you've got a senior on your hand, he'll walk up and go, "Coach, we got a mixer." "Yep, sit in the soft middle." "Got it. Go get it." You know, and we try to keep it like that. Those are the chalk talks that we have, and we do that about once a month, and we start those early.
Okay. Link, what about you guys?
Honestly, our chalk talk is probably more based on making sure we understand the signs.
Okay.
And
yep.
Scouting report stuff. You know, like,
sure.
If you're strictly talking meeting session, I would say more of our time is spent making sure the signs are under control offensively and defensively, and then scouting report information. And Jerry, our pitching coach, Jerry Edwards, does a great job of gathering our scouting report data. And then Joey Holcomb, who coaches third and helps with the offense, he will dig in and try to find any sort of video we can find of the starting pitchers. And those are good meeting sessions, and I think it really sets you up for competitive success I think chalk talk or meetings to try to make sure individuals understand their role and their drills and showing them how to do some of these drills specific to them. Mm-hmm. We spend some time on that. I think sheets right before we start our batting practice, if I take 5 minutes and it's very specific instruction on what we're about to go do, what we're going to do on the field, what we're going to do in the cage, what the iron like short game is going to be about that day,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I really have their attention at that point. Like, we've already transitioned from our defensive segments into our offense. The field is set up, and I've got them right there. And that seems to transition or translate well to the work they're about to do. And that's like a mini chalk talk hitting lecture, 5-6 minutes,
mm-hmm.
very intense, very specific, and then we go do it. So I think that would probably summarize how we, if you want to meet and talk about it, that's probably for the most part what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Two different approaches, but again, getting the same tension from those players and getting the same information out in different ways. I think that's what's great for our listeners. Now, Link, I'd love to pose this question to you and let you start this one as close as we're going to get to talking mechanics. And again, for the listeners and the coaches paying attention to this, if you notice through our podcast, we try to stay away from some of that stuff because it's so polarizing. One guy believes in this and another guy believes in that, and there's really no middle ground. So this is as close as we're going to get to talking mechanics. But what I'm more interested in, Link, I want you to start is, how do you groove the swing that you need that fits your offense philosophy? You're talking about slugging percentage and really looking to increase the doubles and the triples and the home runs. How are you grooving that swing? What are the coaching cues inside that you use with those Spartan hitters?
I kind of break it down into two big picture things for the guys. Swing. I mean, we talk about swing, and that's mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting is separate from swing. So building the swing, stance, how you load, your stride direction and length,
mm-hmm.
how you enter the hitting zone, where you make contact, and the finish strictly dictated on timing and trying to survive. If you're a little bit fooled, I think having a unique finish pitch by pitch is what good hitters do. So I try to keep the finish just based on timing, elevation of pitch, and how it should flow.
Mm-hmm.
Stance a little more than shoulder width apart, where you, once you've taken your load and how that nice, subtle, soft load based on fastball rhythm. We talk fastball rhythm, everything other than sitting off speed, everything is based on fastball rhythm with the ability to adjust. And that's how the load evolves. It should be a quiet, simple, rhythmic load. When you get into that negative move, I think the knob of the bat should settle in over the back foot. I think the barrel of the bat, the cap of the bat for me probably doesn't really pass the midline of the head. Once you've cocked and loaded, the front shoulder probably points at the off infielder. Stride direction towards the pitcher. Stride length is kind of an individualized thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then keeping that barrel inside the path of the ball as you enter, as long as you possibly can, is where that bat speed builds. And keeps you, people talk about stay closed, keeping that front side on it while the barrel works from the inside to contact. It's pretty much what I'm about. Nice and athletic and balanced and aggressive and rhythmic. Those are all swing-related mechanical things that we talk about.
That's it. I love the cues inside that. BG, same question. How are you guys approaching cage work or on field, but more of the swing, how you're teaching those Aggie hitters?
Yeah, the swing versus swings, Link. That's
great.
Good stuff. You know, sheets. The first thing that we talk about, and you know, I have this on a PowerPoint. Our kids see it in the first week. Is you have to know who you are, and I think as an offensive coach, you have to know what you're trying to establish. You know, I'll give you an example. Take nothing away from anybody. I was at a showcase a month ago. I was watching an underclass showcase. I counted it when it got to about 15. I was watching some 2020 and 2021 hitters, 130, 140 pounds. I saw 21 consecutive fly balls to the opposite side or dead central. And I mean, like, 140 feet.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting there going, that's not knowing who you are. And I know we're talking launch angle and all
there
that
you go.
Stuff, but
crack it open.
You got to know who you are. And so that's the first priority, is to know who you are so you can go to work on who you need to be. If you're a big, strong guy, if you're A.J. Reed, we need to get the ball up into the air, and we need to work on that, and we're going to translate that mechanically. And if you're Greg Poplison, you're a 6'3 runner at New Mexico State, or Marcus Still, we need to get on top hit line drives and ground balls because you can run a 6'3, and then the good Lord gave you those skills. But we place a lot of emphasis on strength. The weight room, I think any hitting coach is going to tell you that that's going to impact mechanics, and then I'll get into the mechanic part. You know, the three basic things that I talk about, again, start with a non-mechanical issue, and that's rhythm and the relationship with the baseball. I think I spend the most time with our hitters on that, and a true understanding of what it means to be on time. And what that means for us is, can you mechanically, what you do on the tee and in front toss, can you do that live? And if you can do those proper movements in terms of working from the ground up, front heel down, back heel up with proper knee angle, hips are still online, hands are back, and then you begin rotation. If you can do that within sequence, your rhythm is good. And if not, we have to attack that first. Link talked about that, but same thing that we're talking about. A load and a trigger is slow, it's easy, it's rhythmic, and it's comfortable. And it's based off of the relationship with the pitcher, and it's based off of fastball timing. Our absolutes, once we get the rhythm, the trigger, the load, and we make our movement from stride into the launch position, you know, the four basic keys, that you're online, you have proper posture, everything is lined up to the middle of the field from toe to toe, you're 50-50 in an athletic position, meaning that your weight is evenly distributed front and back, that your hands are back, and for us, it's our defining point of hands back is the knob behind the back knee at launch position, and then the bat angle. Link talked about the barrel. We talk about that as well as the knob of the bat, making sure it's at that catcher's glove, not the head, just as a general reference. Those are the four keys. And then I spend mechanically, can you get separated when you work from the ground up? When the front heel gets down and the back heel begins its move with the back knee firing to the middle, can the hand stay back? And we keep it very simple with that movement, because if you can get into that position, when you begin rotation, the elbow is going to get into the slot position. You'll stay inside the baseball, and you can rotate to contact at the front foot, palm up, palm down. And then the last thing from contact is to get to extension. And for us, it's top hand, palm pointed down, get it to the middle. And once you get there, however you finish as individual, if you want to finish high and low, we haven't gotten into the high finish and getting off of the backside and creating some launch angle and all that stuff. I believe in a flat path. The bat is naturally going to work up in the zone, but we talk about being flat and we talk about getting into the slot position. And again, I think that's all dictated on rhythm, proper launch, and then the proper initial movement. And if you can get there, I think getting to the slot and getting to contact is going to be clean.
That's good stuff. And Greeny, I want to pose this to you and more into the player's mindset in terms of what they're getting from these offensive talks and the drill work and the complete understanding of what you're trying to do at New Mexico State. What's the feedback that you're getting? What's the player's perspective on offensive approach? Certainly, it's changing from an 18 to a 22-year-old. But even, you know, a year ago, you guys were very heavy in older guys. What was the feedback and perspective that you got from those groups on your offensive approach?
You know, Sheets, what we get is again, that the whole thing is about the relationships and the trust.
Sure.
You know, and I think the big thing that we get from our guys is that they feel like we're in their corner. And Link mentioned this, and I'm really big on it. But, you know, my job, and I hit with our guys all the time. I can hit a single to right field with the best of them. Now, if you need me to hit it into the gap, we have a problem.
Sure.
But in terms of a rhythm, you know, I try to mimic our hitters and I try to hit with them, and I do hit with them a lot in the mornings, one-on-one sessions. That's where it starts for me. But in terms of the feedback, what they get, simplicity, that started with AJ Reed, back in 14. AJ and I are still very close. And that also starts with guys that I coached in the past, whether it was Decker or Crawford, that'll tell you, man, you gave me too much, or it was scattered, you know, and
there you go.
And now moving into Kentucky, simplifying and creating a very simple approach. So the two things that I get is that we're in their corner one, and that we keep it simple and they like that. And then what we really try to do is to, again, make it individual, you know, for each hitter. Those are the very important things as a hitting coach, is to keep it individualized.
Love it. You can never stress that enough on any podcast we have. Keep it individual. Link, add to that. What's kind of the feedback you're getting from your players that they're offering from the offensive approach, changing their mindset and their perspective?
They appreciate and they know the value of having work on sitting away or sitting in. And when a guy's sitting in and gets it and hits a home run, a big home run, and they come in, their coach, I was sitting in, baby, like, and they're all fired up.
That's
what I love.
Yep.
And watching them enjoy to take the stuff that they've been handed and use it in a competitive setting, they appreciate that. And that's when I get my most enjoyment, is watching them take these weapons. We call them weapons, man. Weapons to go succeed in competition. Like, take these approaches and go do it. And by the end of skill work in the fall, man, they've had 4 weeks of individualized drills. It's for them. And, you know, at some point you got to shut the skill work down by rule. Like, you got to stop coaching them when they get into exams and that sort of thing. So when I walk by that cage and you see guys doing the drills that you taught them, and they now know that, hey, this stuff is for me. And you got one guy over here off the tee and he's doing a, you know, a weighted bat drill, smoking balls on the inside half. You got another guy doing a low tee, off speed tee drill. You got somebody on the other side that's learned how to do front toss the right way, that's doing their top hand, bottom hand work. And they're like, coach, I got it. Like, here, I got this. Take a look. Like, they start to figure out that these things help them. And that's the feedback that means the most. Watching them compete, like, we talk about three contact. We grade contact 3-2-1. Three is your best, purest, most well-struck ball. It doesn't mean it's leaving the park, but everybody's got a three. Everybody's got a two, and one is terrible. So your one contact is bad. And watching them when we're doing some sort of little game on the field or in the cage, and it's some of it's based on your high score for whoever makes the most three contact, and you see guys getting excited and throwing the bat based on us doing a drill in the cage, that's the feedback I want. These guys are learning to compete. They're learning to take your system and the weapons you give them, and they compete with it. Man, sure. That's what it's about for me.
Now, the more you guys get solidified in this offensive approach, I'm certain that when you're out on the trails, you're putting on these recruiting glasses going, I'm looking for guys that fit the mold of what we're looking to do offensively, or there's going to be the least amount of adjustments to have that person inputted into our offense. Coach Jarrett, when you're looking at recruits, when you're looking at student athletes at an event, at a game, at a showcase, what are the things that jump off to you that if I'm a player or coach listening to this, I'm going to guide my players towards that?
Well, I'll start offensively. Does this player get into a consistent position to hit? I want them to be able to do that. And it may not be exactly what I thought was ideal, but do they repeat? Do they get into a good position to hit, a solid position to hit every time? And does it look like they can recognize off-speed pitches? I have a hard time with hitters that can't recognize a breaking ball or a changeup or have no mid-pitch ability to adjust. I think that's a very hard thing to work on. Mm-hmm. And Greeny, I don't know how you feel about it, but if I see a guy that's swinging through average breaking pitches, I have a feeling when they get to us, as those breaking pitches and changeups become more deceptive, I'm going to have a tough time. So get yourself into a good position to hit. Show some pitch recognition skill where you like to see. You got to see enough at bats to figure out if they can do that.
Right.
And, you know, what kind of physical package? Is it a guy that can run? Is it a player that looks like he may develop into an extra base hit type guy? Like, you'd like to be able to visualize the offensive package that this guy brings to the table immediately and then down the road. And logic would have to tell you, you need to find out where that guy would fit in on the field. I mean, as much as we love offense, we know that these guys have to find somewhere on that field where they can athletically perform for you defensively for them to be a recruit that seems to make sense.
That's it. BG, what would you add to the recruiting side of things?
Sheets, we do. We start on defense just in terms of where can we slot them. Mm-hmm. You know, but obviously there is a need for the big for the DH. But we'll start with defense and slot them, which can impact when you're evaluating them, you know, what type of guy you're looking for. You know, and I think we we live in the pro world in terms of when we set our roster that we'll take nine hole defense and speed up the middle, and we'd love an offensive second baseman. But defense is big for us. But when it comes to evaluating a hitter, there's three things that I look at. Link said it. I remember 8-9 years ago, I think my first question was from Coach Savage. I think he was the first one that ever asked me that. I never even thought about it. It's like, hey, what are your keys when you're evaluating a hitter in the recruiting process? What do you look for?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, it starts number one with rhythm. And I think it starts with, from a recruiting standpoint, is just what's the toughest thing to coach? And what are the most difficult things for us to be able to impact? You know, I think we can impact the launch position. I think we can impact offensive approach. I think the two most difficult things to make an impact on mechanically or based on an approach, the two things for me that I've had difficulty in are, number one, getting a hitter to get separated. If he stays connected, that separation, even an inch, can be a real challenge. But Link hit it, and that's one of the three keys for me in evaluating a hitter is rhythm, number one, bat speed, number two. But recognition is critical, and you've got to have rhythm, you've got to recognize pitches, and then you've got to have bat speed. Bat speed, but again, that's touch and go. It might be a 165-pound kid who's long. He's got great features. His family is athletic. His older brother blossomed with a 30-pound gain in college. So, you know, you have to measure that projection, and you know, over time, you can start to categorize specific players and go, oh, I think he's going to be there with his body, but there's some projection involved. But, you know, bat speed is critical, you know, or can he handle it? Because if he doesn't have that, or at least the look that he might be able to have it, now you're talking about having to make early decisions. Now you're talking about not having the ability to hit off speed or late in the count. And now you're talking about a pinch hitter. So the recognition component, I think, goes in with the strength and the bat speed. And those are big. But rhythm, recognition, and bat speed for me are the three we look at.
Awesome. And we never like to close a show, and you guys have been so forthright, so transparent with what you do within your respective programs offensively, but we never like to close out a show without asking this question. And Coach Green, I want you to start us off. Advice for young coaches. We have so many young guys that listen to these podcasts. They're craving information. They're connecting with you guys through the airwaves. What would you offer that young coach right now that's going to set him off on a different path moving forward through his career?
I'm really glad you asked that. I'm excited because I just think in retrospect, what could I have done at an earlier age to become a better teacher, instructor, developer? Sheets number one, I learned this at Kentucky, coming into the office and seeing all of the things that Coach Cohen, mm-hmm. who was the head coach and hitting guy at Kentucky, he had PowerPoints and presentations on so many aspects. You remember this.
Sure.
That impact. And I think going back, the sooner as a coach that you can put into a PowerPoint, a presentation, a booklet, where you can truly organize your thoughts, I think when you do that, you become a better teacher instructor because you have your most important vital keys for you, which you're going to give to the players. Organize your thoughts, get it into a PowerPoint, a presentation. And then with that, if you have the opportunity, whether it's to a little league, a high school, or obviously state conventions, clinics, and any of that, get out and present and speak. Our job is to teach and instruct and develop and to take these young men each and every year and to make them better. And our job is to recruit and to go into a home and sell a family. And I think the ability to speak is critical. So organize your thoughts, get out and share your thoughts. And then the second thing that in retrospect for a young coach that I wish I would have done is I wish when I was 22 years of age, not cognizant of NCAA rules, that I would have walked into Augie Garrido's office, Coach Garrido's office, or Coach Marquez, or any of the legends, and said, Coach, can I just sit around and watch you practice?
That's right.
Can I just, or Coach Martin, for crying out loud, Link, you were a part of that. Coach Gillespie, you know, those legends in your area, us coaches love to share because we love to learn and we know somebody impacted us. I would go sit around a great program and see if they'll give you 10 minutes to just watch their practice. It will impact you. And I say that because I've been so fortunate to be around some of the great men and coaches that I've been around. I got lucky, you know, but maybe others aren't. So be around great coaches would be my second bit of advice and just soak it up, which means, see, there's lead in. Get to the ABCA.
That's it. Did we mention we're doing a convention in Indianapolis in January? Have we made that point yet?
That's right.
Link, same question, man. It would be remiss if we let you get off this call without offering your advice to young coaches that are listening to the show.
Yeah, Greeny hit on some great stuff, organizing your thoughts and being able to consolidate and express your thoughts on hitting, infield play, catching, pitching, outfield play, base running. Organize that stuff. Greeny thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And you nailed that. I would say be an active coach. I think finding things to do to stay active and busy at the field, making the field a better place,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing a little better job dragging, finding, you know, take care of the warning track, things that I always tried to make sure when I left as a young coach, I was going to have done everything I could that day to get our place better, our kids better, the field better, keeping things tidy, like being an active coach. And the more active you are, whether it's, you know, coaching a high school team or a JV team or, you know, as a volunteer or a student assistant, like the more you can involve yourself in activity and helping out, not only the kids, but every other part of the program, I think you kind of dive in and people notice that. People notice. Going to work camps, man, if somebody calls and says, hey, coach, man, can I come work your showcase? I think that goes a long way. And when you get to those camps and you're working the camps, be active. Throw BP. Grab the fungo and hit a fungo. Coach, can I throw this round? Coach, can I hit the showcase? Coach, what can I do in the cage? Like, kind of you got to show that you are eager to help in a lot of different ways, because when you first get into it, those are the things you're going to have to do.
Yep.
And that's my one selling point. And I think when we started this show talking about my first coaching job and Dave Barnett giving me a shot in the convention and all the things I learned right out of the gate, I embraced it. And I think it helped me. And I think it would help every young coach if they can embrace each one of those challenges, field, facility, players. That's the way you make a name for yourself and get started and get in there. People notice, and that's what the young coaches want.
I'm going to easily add an offensive cliche to the exclamation point on this show. We have knocked it out of the park with two of the very best offensive guys in the country. We've been talking with Brian Green, head coach, New Mexico State. Also been talking with Link Jarrett, head coach at UNC Greensboro. Gentlemen, we appreciate your membership and the ABCA being so loyal to our mission of growing the great game. And we thank you for being on the call today. Best of luck.
Thank you, Sheik.
Thank you, Sheik. We'll see
Enjoy the green.
There is zero doubt in my mind that if you were truly listening to Greeny and Link in this show and you opened yourself up and challenged how you were going to go about teaching your offensive approach, you just got better today in roughly about an hour. It's awesome insight from these two tremendous baseball men. It's always great to hear how influential the ABCA has been on both these guys, but I love their feedback there at the end for young coaches. Just some powerful words. We hope that you took that in and planned accordingly. But I told you, you needed pen and paper for this one. Huge thanks to Brian Green in New Mexico State and Link Jarrett from UNC Greensboro, both joining our podcast and sharing the inner workings of how they approach offensive baseball. Best of luck, Greeny and Link. We appreciate you guys. Look forward to talking more soon and keep rolling with the Aggies and the Spartans. And another huge thanks to our great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. We appreciate their support of our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. If you want more information, reach out to these guys, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. Reach out and find out how they can transform your facility and find out why they've been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. Now, here's the quick rundown on everything you need to know. Following this episode on this upcoming Monday, July 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I hope to see you guys join us on our hashtag ABCA chat on Twitter, connecting coaches from all over the country. We talk through your program's offensive approach to scoring runs. It's going to be an absolute awesome time online. Should be a great night for fellowship and networking. Just a bunch of baseball guys getting better. Monday, July 24th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on our hashtag ABCA chat. Also, we hope you know about our ABCA Barnstormers coaching clinics. We're packing up the tour bus. We're going to hit 20 different cities throughout the Midwest and the Carolinas this fall. I want you to check out more information on the entire tour. Plus, you can register online through our website, abca.org/clinics. Come join us at the ballpark. We got 7 coaching clinics, but it's more importantly an opportunity to help grow the game of baseball inside your community, and we hope to see you at one of our Barnstormers clinics this fall. And if you haven't already, guys, join the ABCA. It's only $45. You'll be part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity. And we hope you're making plans for this January in Indianapolis. Our 2018 ABCA convention is coming soon. Join us and over 6,000 other coaches from around the world in Indianapolis, all in the spirit of learning and professional development. It's an absolute no-brainer for any coach across any level of baseball, our ABCA convention in Indy this January. And now here's your call for action, coaches. We love the feedback that's coming in about our shows, their guests, our content, how much they're hitting you right between the eyes and helping you develop and grow as a coach. But sometimes it's the feedback you get you didn't expect that caused you to reevaluate things and move and plan accordingly. And what we got was a call from Ben Reel, head coach at Indiana University Southeast, a close friend of mine that didn't even know we were putting a podcast out. And this is a loyal ABCA member that didn't know about podcasts, didn't know that we had one out, didn't know that he could find time throughout his day to mix these into his routine and find ways to get better as a coach and a guy that's having great success on the field. And it certainly made me reevaluate how we're getting our information out to where we want to include you into the fold. I will be better, but we're asking that you be better. We ask that you look to bring up the community around you. This is for every coach across every level, all the players, parents, fans, enthusiasts that are listening to the show. We all have baseball people around us that would love to connect with some of these great baseball minds. Jim Schlossnagel, Rick Vanderhook, Augie Garrido, Jerry Weinstein, the list goes on, but this content is always here for them on their time. We all have Automobile University. We can all turn down Wu-Tang Clan and turn up the Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and find ways to get better at various times throughout our day, mowing our ballpark, cutting our grass at home, sitting in our chair at the office. And we can all find ways to take in this content and make ourselves grow and develop as coaches. So here's your call to action. I'm asking that each of you go to your phone, go to your computer, go to your Twitter account, go to your Facebook, a call to action. Reach out to all the people inside your phone. Maybe it's all the players on your team. If I'm a high school or college coach, it's the players that I coach. They get a chance to listen to some of this great information and improve themselves, improve their knowledge, their IQ about the game. If I'm a high school coach, maybe it's the middle school or the youth coaches in my community. You want to make sure that they're coaching their players great, so when they come to you, you can hit the ground running. Same thing for college coaches. All the high school and travel coaches in your phone, if they're listening to the show and getting better just like you are, those players are going to come in more informed and ready to roll when they hit your campus. So again, when you think about it across every front and every angle, we all can do our part to spread the word about this show and make sure we are growing the baseball community from the grassroots effort up. So again, that's your call to action. Give me the feedback. Send us a note. Reach out to me at CoachSheets3 on Twitter or by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. Let us know your feedback on how this episode and all of our episodes are received by all the people you reached out to, guys, and we truly appreciate your help on that. So as always, guys, thanks for listening in. We appreciate you staying dialed in. And until next week, we just ask you keep growing, you keep developing, you keep challenging what you're doing in this game. We wish you and your club the very best. And thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.